Morning. I don't have my bag with me this morning because what I have fits in my pocket. It's my hand. I brought my hand with me this morning. Yeah, I'm kind of attached to it. How many of you have siblings? If you don't, you had to learn this outside the home. You ever been smacked by your brother or sister? Maybe you deserved it, maybe you didn't. I deserved it most of the time. You've been smacked, and you get smacked by your sibling. You don't get smacked by your siblings? Okay, yeah. It's true. I had a sister. Not a brother. So I didn't get punched. No, she had other ways of getting to me. You get hit by a sibling, and generally what you want to do is immediately hit them back. Yeah. All right? Come on. Yeah. Okay. I should just have him stand up sometimes and give the examples. We want to strike back. And sometimes with our siblings, if they did something to us, we would say, just you wait. Right? Just you wait. I'm going to sit on this, and I'm going to stew on this, and I'm going to find a better way to get you back. Right? And we had to learn something that is hard, and that is forgiveness. And forgiveness is a hard thing with siblings when you're young, because they're right there, and you can dole out justice immediately, right? And you can get them back right away, and it seems a lot easier than it would be to forgive. And as parents, you know, my parents were always like, you got to say you're sorry. Did you always mean it? No. But you over time learned that forgiveness had to happen or there wasn't going to be true justice. There'd be vengeance, but there wouldn't be true justice. And it's hard to see that when you're a kid. It's hard to realize that, but as you get older, you find that if you hold on to these things, if you hold a grudge for a long time, it eats at you, and it does nothing to them. They don't care. Half of them don't even know. But it eats at you, and it hurts you. And that forgiveness is to release that. It's to heal that in order for us to find true justice. It doesn't mean that people are going to get away with stuff all the time. No, we do have to seek justice for certain things. Absolutely. You know, people shouldn't hit other people, period. Right? So people that are hitting other people, they do need justice. But I've got to find forgiveness in order to bring about that justice. And I only do that because of Jesus and the forgiveness that God showed me. And Joseph was a spoiled boy, and he told his brothers these dreams, and he was the favorite, right? And they held on to that bitterness. They held on to these grudges. They held on to all that stuff, and it developed all this bitterness in them that when it came about that they had an opportunity to dole out vengeance, they did it. And they took their brother, and they threw him in a pit, and they were ready to kill him. I've never been that mad at my sister. And they had it so bad because they didn't have that forgiveness. And they were adults, and they hadn't learned that forgiveness. I'm going to turn it over to Fred, as he's going to take that even further for you guys as we go to Junior Church.
Thank you, brother. Good morning, everybody. Good to see everybody. I want you to open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37, if you will, please. Genesis chapter 37. I will be studying that text today. Last week, we began a new series on the life of Joseph from Genesis 37 through the end of through chapter 50. And I've titled it, When Life is the Pits. And we began this study by looking at how Joseph came from a very messed up family. Some people would use the word dysfunctional. And if you think your family is somewhat dysfunctional, I mean, Joseph's family was off the dysfunction chart, okay? I mean, he really had a messed up family. And part of the problem was when there is one man who had 13 children from four wives, there is going to be sibling rivalry, especially when you pick out one of your children and make him the obvious favorite of all the others. And the favoritism shown Joseph from his father had created intense friction between him and his older brothers, especially when Jacob gave him a robe typically worn by nobility, elevating Joseph above them, and they hated him for it. They hated that him because he was dad's favorite. And then add to that the dreams that Joseph shared with his brothers about how they were going to all bow down to him. You have the makings of bitter animosity brewing for the little brother, and that is our focus today as we talk about bitter animosity. Now, to some extent, we have all been victims of animosity, and maybe even bitter animosity. Now, Webster defines animosity as strong hatred or an active hostility. Animosity occurs when we feel someone has taken something from us that we are powerless to get back. And so we hold on to the hurt and attempt to remind ourselves and to others of the injustice that we have experienced in hopes that someone will save us, that someone will restore what we've lost. However, animosity only makes our sense of injustice grow. I mean, it does nothing to heal the wound caused by a perceived injustice. In fact, it causes the hurt to become bitter that only festers and swells, and unless dealt with, it will have the power to destroy us from within and others from without. And this is where we find ourselves in our text today, starting with Genesis chapter 37, verse 12. Now, we see here, number one, I want us to look at animosity shown toward Joseph, okay? Animosity shown toward Joseph. And our story opens up, verses 12 and following, with Jacob sending his son Joseph to check on his older brother. So follow with me as we read here verses 12 through 14. Now, Joseph's brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel, who is Jacob, said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. And so he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with all the flocks, and then bring word back to me." Now, Joseph's brothers are out doing what they normally do. You know, they're in a field somewhere caring for the livestock. And this was their family's livelihood. I mean, they had large herds of sheep and goats that they had to take from place to place to find green pastures so that they could graze, and streams of water so that they could drink. And, you know, in a given day, they could travel miles from home. But did you notice here where 17-year-old Joseph is? Did you notice? He is home while his brothers are out working. I mean, and as I said last week, Joseph's ornamented robe that covered his body to his wrists and to his ankles was not conducive to manual labor. And so he was allowed by his father to stay home and chill out. You know, sleeping in his own bed while his brothers were out working under the heat of the sun and sleeping in tents, you know, as they took care of the livestock. And you just know that the privileges that have been given to their little brother by their father is adding to the animosity that they already feel toward Joseph. So Jacob then sends Joseph to check on his brothers, and then he says, come back and tell me how they are doing. Now, this gives us further insight into what is said about Joseph in the latter part of verse 2, where it says he brought his father a bad report about them, a bad report about his brothers. So here is Joseph, who Jacob sending Joseph out to just kind of spy on his brothers and come back and tell me what they're doing. So Joseph is his father's snitch. I mean, that is how, you know, his dad had been using him to spy on his brothers and then come back and report if there's anything off. Now Jacob had certainly had good reasons wanting to know what his sons were up to, okay? Because that they had proven to be conniving and ruthless and immoral on many occasions. But using Joseph to spy on his brothers has only created more distrust and animosity toward him. So Jacob, in verse 17, Joseph takes off looking for his brothers. And after some searching, he finally founds them near Dothan, a small settlement about 12 miles from Shechem. And as Joseph gets closer to where they are grazing the herd, they spot him coming. They can see him at a distance, and here he comes. And their animosity toward Joseph has already been seething. And they know why he is there. Daddy has sent his favorite son to spy on us. I mean, he's coming to inspect us and tell us what to do and rule over us, and then he's going to go back home to Daddy and tattle on us. This is what they are thinking. But as Joseph gets closer, what happens and what we read in the latter part of verse 18 is something that is absolutely absurd. And it says, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. They plotted to kill him. I want you to let that sink in for a moment. These grown men are planning to kill their teenage brother. I mean, we understand that they can be upset with all this whole favoritism thing, but to respond by killing their little brother? I mean, why would they jump to such an extreme action? I mean, why not just say something like, well, here comes the tattletale dreamer. Let's taunt him when he gets here. I tell you what, let's give him the wettest wet willy that he's ever had. Does anybody know what a wet willy is? Okay? Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, you put your finger in your mouth, get all the saliva that you possibly can, and jam it into someone's ear. Okay? I mean, this is what they could be thinking. I mean, wouldn't that be better than killing him? Man? But now, you know, I'm not saying that that's right, okay? But we understand a little bit of horseplay with their little brother given the kind of rival relationship that they had. But how morbid it is to respond to the rivalry between them with wanting to murder their kid brother. But yet they know this would not only get rid of Joseph once and for all, who they believe is wanting to rule over them, but it would also be like sticking a dagger in their dad's heart to lose his favorite son. And then the brothers begin to talk among themselves as to how they're going to pull off the murder of their little brother. So let's read on here, verses 19 and 20. Follow with me. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him, and then we'll see what comes of this dreamer. I mean, apparently some of the brothers have been thinking about this for a while. I mean, undoubtedly, ever since Joseph unwisely, you know, told them about the dreams that one day they would bow down to him, the brothers had been discussing among themselves as to how they were going to prevent that from ever happening. We can't bow down to Joseph. How are we going to stop this? If this dream is true, how are we going to stop it? And now an unforeseen opportunity presents itself. And as Joseph gets closer, they plot not only his murder, but they plot the cover-up. I mean, listen, when this dreamer finally gets here, let's jump him and kill him, throw his body in this pit, and we'll just tell Dad some ferocious animal devoured him. Brothers and sisters, when bitter animosity consumes you, it will often lead to us to say and do things that are horrific. That are horrific things that attempt to make right whatever wrong that we believe that somebody's committed against us. And that is exactly what has happened with these brothers. But then right in the middle of this murderous plot, a glimmer of encouragement appears. Let's read on, verses 21 through 22. Now when Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue Joseph from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Just throw him into this cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So Reuben, the oldest of the brothers, I mean, he doesn't want to see his little brother murdered. That's not what he wants. So he convinces the others to just throw Joseph into a pit right out there in the middle of the desert. However, his plan is that later he's going to come back and get his brother out of the pit and take him home to be back with his daddy. So the brothers do exactly what Reuben had suggested. Reading on, verses 23 and 25, it says, so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty, there was no water in it. And as they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Now, when Joseph finally arrived, the first thing they do is roughly grab him and strip him of his ornamental robe. And with cruel pleasure, they rip from Joseph the symbol of his father's favor. I mean, this robe said to them that Dad loves Joseph more than us. He is Dad's favorite, and we hate him for it. And they then throw their little brother kicking and screaming into a pit, which was a man-made cistern to catch water in the desert when it rained. And then they sat down for lunch. They throw their brother into a pit, and they have lunch. I mean, do you see what bitter animosity has done to these brothers? How heartless they have become? I mean, while their little brother is agonizing in the pit, possibly hurt, they are enjoying a meal together. Hey, Levi, can you pass me the lamb chops? Man, there is no care, no concern whatsoever for the welfare of their brother. And as they are enjoying their meal, a caravan of merchants, you know, traveling to Egypt passes through. And Judah then comes up. Judah comes up with a brilliant idea. Let's read on, verses 26 and 27. And Judas said to his brothers, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites, you know, to Uncle Ishmael's family. Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. I mean, after all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. Now, here, Judah, you know, this is one way to get rid of their brother and make a few bucks in the process, okay? And so Judah says, listen, guys, and instead of killing Joseph, let's just sell him as a lifelong slave to the Midianites. I mean, after all, he is our brother. I mean, can't you just feel the love here? I mean, they love this guy. And so they lift Joseph from the pit and sell him as a slave to the Midianites for 20 shekels of silver, and then they then take him down to Egypt. So here is the plan. Now Reuben finds this out. He goes back later and looking for his brother and find him gone. And Reuben's extremely upset. But so now Joseph is no longer with him. He is their dad's favorite son. Don't you think your dad may figure out that he's not there anymore? And so they have to, they have to explain somehow to their father what has happened to his favorite son. So reading on here, verses 31 through 35. It says here, then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, we found this. Examine to see whether it's your son's robe. He recognized it and said, it's my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. And then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, no, he said, in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son. And so his father wept for him. So now the sons then bring this robe that they have torn and have covered in goat's blood. And they give it to his father, said, could this possibly be Joseph's robe? And after examining the bloody robe, Jacob, you know, recognized it immediately as being the gift that he had given his son. And we can imagine the pain and heartbreak that this father is going through right now. And although Joseph is alive, I mean, the father doesn't know that. I mean, he is led to believe that his son had been brutally killed by some wild animal. But I want you to look again at verse 35. In verse 35, it says, all his sons and daughters, including his daughters-in-law, come to comfort him. I mean, what hypocrisy. I mean, these sons are pretending to comfort their father who is deeply grieving the loss of his son, knowing, you know, good and well that it's all a lie. It's all a lie. And yet not one of his sons steps forward and tells the truth, not even Reuben. Okay, let's switch gears here. Number two. That was the animosity shown toward Joseph. And now I want us to look at the animosity shown toward us. Now again, although we don't have anyone who is plotting to kill us and throw us into a pit, or at least I hope not, I think it's accurate to say that there are people we know who have shown animosity toward us, and maybe it's somebody that you're dealing with right now. Somebody out there that you know, man, is just seething, so angry and bitter towards you for one reason or another. And I think there are many possible motives as to why one might hold animosity toward us. I mean, first of all, it could simply be that we have wronged somebody. We have committed a wrong against them. Okay? I mean, that's a motive that somebody might hold animosity against us. And if so, it is our responsibility to try to reconcile with that person by confessing our wrong, confessing our sin, and seeking his or her forgiveness. That's what we need to do if we have wronged somebody. That's what Jesus says we are to do in Matthew chapter 5. Secondly, it could be the result of a perceived wrong, that we've committed something. I mean, the person believes that we have said or done something against them when actually we did not, and yet they still hold animosity against us. That has certainly happened before as well. Thirdly, it could simply be merely be a misunderstanding. Just a misunderstanding. I mean, this happens when a person, you know, doesn't comprehend something correctly. An innocent act or word or implication creates an offense. Again, it's all an innocent, but yet there is a misunderstanding that occurs. And then fourthly, it could possibly be the result of a simple disagreement when there are two opposing views on a given subject. I mean, do you think that there is animosity between political parties? You ever watch Congress? Yeah, opposing views. So whatever the reason, someone has moved from beyond mere anger. And by the way, the Bible tells us in Ephesians chapter 4 that anger within itself is not a sin. Paul tells us that we are to deal with our anger quickly. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. But he says, we can anger and still not commit sin. But the problem is when we allow our anger to seethe toward bitterness and animosity, which often leads to retaliation in some way. And this is the problem that has happened with these brothers who were angry with Joseph about the dreams and everything else, but now they want to kill him. Okay? They want to kill him. But the Apostle Paul tells us how we are to respond to those who hold bitter animosity toward us. I want you to open your Bibles to Romans 12. Romans chapter 12. And I want us to look at beginning of verse 17, Romans chapter 12. Paul said, "Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it's possible, as far as it depends upon you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, 'It is mine to avenge, I will repay,' says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Now, in these verses, Paul presents four ways that we are to respond toward those who hold animosity against us. Okay? First of all, he said in verse 17, "Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody." In other words, church, we need to be living like Christ before others. We are to be kind and caring and loving and treating people the way we want to be treated. And by doing so, hopefully, we will not be angering someone or creating an offense of some kind. Secondly, Paul goes on to say in verse 18, he says, "If it is possible, as far as it depends upon you, live at peace with everyone." We are to live at peace with everyone. Now, it is true that even though we are very careful as to how we relate to others, there will be those who will be offended by us anyway. I mean, Jesus lived a perfect life, but he had enemies, didn't he? And that's why Paul understandably said, "If it is possible, be at peace with everyone. I mean, Paul knows that no matter how hard we try, there are some people who will take an offense in some way, who will not be at peace with us. There are those out there. You know people like that now in your life. You know them. And that's why Paul understandably said, again, if it's possible, but he goes on to say that as far as it depends on us. And what he means by that is he is pointing out that we are the ones to make the effort. We are the ones to initiate the peace talks. He says, so as far as it depends upon you, be at peace with everyone. Treat people well. Love people. Forgive people. But, you know, you do your part. That's what he's saying. But then thirdly, Paul goes on to say, in verse 17, do not repay anyone for evil. Verse 19, he says, do not take revenge. Now, we're going to learn in our study about the life of Joseph that he was given an opportunity to take revenge on his brothers. But he didn't. Genesis 42. And even though they violently stripped him of his robe, threw him in a pit, and then sold him into slavery, not knowing if he's going to be tortured and murdered and whatever. And even while that was happening, he was pleading and begging his brothers not to do it. Genesis 42, 21 tells us. Joseph shows nothing but love and kindness toward his brother when he sees them years later. Nothing but love and kindness. Although he had the authority to make their lives miserable, he doesn't. And then number four, Paul says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Verse 21. It is in our human nature to want to reciprocate the hate and animosity that someone shows us. That it's our human nature. You punch me, I'm going to punch you back. It's in our human nature. But Paul wants us to understand that we cannot overcome hate with hate, bitterness with bitterness, animosity with animosity. All that does is just make matters much worse. And you cannot battle these emotions and these sins with more sin. It just can't happen. But Paul tells us, as he writes the Ephesian church, he tells us how we can overcome evil with good. Turn your Bible a few pages over to Ephesians chapter 4. And look at verses 31 and 32. Paul writes in verse 31, he says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Instead, he says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God has forgiven you. Paul tells us that, yes, there are going to be those who are going to hate you. There are going to be those who are going to be bitter towards you and want to do anything they can to make your life miserable. He says, but do not respond in kind. Instead, he says, I want you to get rid of bitterness. And when he says get rid of, he means completely remove it from your life. He says, get rid of bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, slander, and every form of malice. Instead, he says, man, be kind, even to those who want to make your life miserable. Be kind to them. Be compassionate and forgive. And when he says forgive, he says, after all, think about all the things you have done against God, and he has forgiven you. You think about that, and God has forgiven you. And that's how we are to forgive others. You know, dealing with people who hold animosity toward us is not an easy thing to do. If I gave you an opportunity to share some of those stories, you can share. You have those stories in your life. People that, for whatever reason, whether it's your fault or just perceived faults or whatever it might be, who just hold that animosity towards you. And what happens, especially when it's a misunderstanding of some sort, you know, there's a misunderstanding and you go and you try to explain yourself and you try to defend yourself. And many times, even in doing that, it just makes matters worse. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. But still yet, it can make matters worse, because when people allow animosity to consume them, all they care about is, I want to make your life miserable. That's all I want. That's all I want. And that's exactly what Joseph's brothers wanted. And they did. That's why we have to give this to God. And you just got to give it to God. I mean, if you've got people like that in your life, pray about it, turn it over to God, and seek His strength. Look for opportunities to do good for those people who hold animosity towards you. Look for those opportunities. Paul said, if he's hungry, then what? Man, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. He said, if there are those needs that you see, do something about it. Help with those needs. And in the process, hopefully, prayerfully, we begin to soften hearts. We begin to soften hearts as we care for those who hate us. We're going to be singing the invitation song. And as always, the invitation song is that opportunity for us to just look at our lives and think about what we've been talking about today, particularly about animosity. Because again, when we talk about animosity, we talk about animosity shown toward us. Well, maybe we have been guilty of having animosity toward someone else. And if we've been guilty of that, then we need to do some repenting. We need to turn that over to God and seek His forgiveness. And then go to that person and say, I am sorry for what I've done. I am sorry for the way that I have treated you, and seek their forgiveness. But as we sing this song today, it's just an opportunity for you to look deep within your heart and your soul and say, I need to really pray about this. I need to have my family to pray over me. Maybe you're the victim of animosity. Maybe you're the one who has animosity toward others, has animus toward others. Whatever that need might be today, we want to pray for you as together we stand and we sing.